Welcome back. Today we're diving into the Bitcoin revolution in Latin America with Guy Gomez, the visionary behind Orange BTC, a bold Bitcoin-only treasury company leading the charge in Brazil. Guy shares powerful insights on education, transparency, innovation, and what it really takes to build in the Bitcoin space. Let's get into it.
This isn't for everyone. It's for the ones who know the old system is broken and are ready to build something that lasts. Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast.
We're co-hosts Israel Munoz and Lynn Bairstow, and today we are very happy to welcome onto the podcast Guy Gomez, CEO and founder of Orange BTC. First of all, welcome, Guy. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We'll try to stage it into a little bit about you, the broader LATAM picture, and then we can hone in on a little more of the treasury company business model. But let's start from the beginning. You have an exceptionally interesting background in capital markets and Wall Street. Would love to hear a little bit more. I believe you started your career in law and entrepreneurship in Brazil, made your way to the U.S. eventually. Why don't we start off with, you know, who you are and what got you interested in Bitcoin in the first place?
Great, sure. Just a quick background on myself. So I was born and raised in Brazil, went to law school because my dad was a lawyer, my granddad was a lawyer, so thank that was destiny. Early on, realized that law was not for me. So during school, I started my first business, kind of like entrepreneur dream out of a garage with a co-founder, no resources, and just building up out of an idea. We pivoted a few times and eventually found a model that worked. At the time, we were known as a dream come true company, essentially help our clients to live a once-in-a-lifetime experience from playing Paul McCartney to surfing with a big name. So we launched the company, was early on B2C, and eventually grew to become much more like a business experience type of agency. Came to 2016, so about 6 to 7 years after we launched the business, I really wanted to have an experience abroad. The company was stable, growing, but I wanted to study more technology, finance, and have an experience in the U.S. So I moved to the U.S. in 2016 for what was supposed to be a two-year school program and eventually go back home. But out of business school, I joined Bridgewater Associates, which is a hedge fund. So it had nothing to do with my background. But at the time, Ray Dalio, the founder and key name around the company at the time, he was putting up his transition. He was living day to day, going to the board. And my background of entrepreneurship and business school and coming from a different country, and I spent some time on my family business as well back home, I think it made sense. So I joined kind of an internal strategy group that had one key mandate to help Ray with his transition from founder, CEO, to eventually board member, and spent my first year or so with Bridgewater in that role. It was very interesting, gave me an opportunity to like understand the forum, to get to know the key leaders around that organization. But I have always been an entrepreneur. I've always been kind of into business development and growth. So I saw an opportunity within Bridgewater to go work in a new division that was like newly formed under the new leadership that came after Ray to help to grow Bridgewater. So under this new leadership, Bridgewater had the goal of expanding internationally and getting to new pools of capital and new corners of the globe. We brought a guy from BlackRock called Josh Levine to lead that venture. And I joined that unit very early days and worked with Josh Levine and others for about 3 years, helping Bridgewater to get into Asia, Latin America, and Europe. So it was a very interesting opportunity and shaped my understanding about global economy. I think Bridgewater is one of the best macro thinkers around the globe. They put research essentially every single day about what's going on in the markets. And that was very instrumental into my understanding about how money works, how the economy functions, how the markets operate. But at the same time, I found Bitcoin 2016, 17, when I moved to the US, right? That's during business school, through a friend. I got into the space. And once I joined Bridgewater, I was leaving the city, working in Connecticut, where the offices were. And I was going back and forth from the city to the office, listening to Bitcoin podcasts. And then I would get into Bridgewater and consume all the research about macroeconomy and what's going on in the markets. I think those years from 18, 19, that's when I built a deep conviction that Bitcoin could change the world and Bitcoin would eventually grow to become a world's reserve currency. And that's when I decided it was time to leave Bridgewater and jump full-time into Bitcoin. Left Bridgewater in 2022, joined Swan Bitcoin, which is a U.S. firm, Bitcoin only, as chief revenue officer a few weeks prior to Terra Luna blowing up. So saw all the drawdown and then Bitcoin going up again, spent about 2 years and a half, and eventually left to start Orange BTC.
Lynn and I are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where we use our network of venture capital partners and startup founders to connect investors with unique opportunities within the Bitcoin innovation space. Alongside this, we help startup founders with their growth and fundraising. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more.
That's such a fascinating background. And I think there are very few U.S. hedge fund macroeconomics that have the global perspective that Dalio has and that he brought to Bridgewater, which I really appreciate. I've learned a lot from reading his work. I have to think, and we're recording this on January 5th, 2026, and LATAM is very squarely in the spotlight of global attention today with the U.S. activity in Venezuela. I just want to ask you, how much did your background, your growing up in Brazil, being in the LATAM economy, add to your early understanding of Bitcoin or your belief that it could be instrumental in changing global finance? Can you talk to us a little bit about your personal perspective coming from within LATAM? And then also, probably it ties into why you decided to leave Swan and start Orange BTC in Brazil as a resource within LATAM. But we'd love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, I think like being from Brazil, Latin America, is a key aspect of my understanding of Bitcoin, right? And it has many reasons. First of all, I recall as a little kid, my parents, once they gather paychecks, the first thing you do, you go straight to the supermarket and spend every single dime and get as many goods as possible, because 2-3 days later, you get 20% less as much, right? Inflation was so high at the time, like we're talking about triple, four-digit inflation, like it was crazy, that the value of the money would go away in a matter of days. So once you realize what currency debasement means, what hyperinflation means, I think every single Latin American actually have seen that, right? Not only currency debasement, but also what it means to have a weak currency, right? When you grow up in a country outside of the US, you grow up tracking how much the dollar's worth, essentially on a daily basis. Like the daily news, they always close it saying, hey, how much is the price of the dollar? Because so much of the economy, from the oil and all the imports, they're pricing dollars, and your life is really dependent on what's going on in the global economy and the price of the dollar. So I think you kind of realize that there are other currencies beyond your home currency, and even your home currency is not sorting at all. Like I've seen in my short lifetime, many currencies going on in Brazil, but like when you go back 50 years, like there are many, many currencies that came and went away in Brazil and broader LATAM because of inflation, currency debasement, and other issues with the local economies. And I think another key element of understanding Bitcoin was moving abroad. But when I left Brazil in 2016 to come to the US, you start to understand that it's not that easy to trade internationally. Like, I had my savings in Brazil, I had to sell that and bring to the US and open a new bank account, and they're starting from zero and you're going to a bank account in the US. You don't have a social security number, you don't have anything. You're trying to start from zero, and then you're trying to get another financial institution to get you as a client. So all of those frictions that still happen to this date, right, also help to shape, say, hey, the world could operate in a much more functional and elegant way with a single currency that is to some extent accepted around the globe, and the amount of wealth and productivity and efficiency that would be unlocked without all the frictions. Because not only the friction is the cost of converting money, right? You have to sell and you pay a fee and you have a spread, and then you bring to a different currency and all that stuff. So all of those help to shape my understanding about macroeconomy, about currencies, about how the current financial system works. Led me to Bitcoin, which eventually led me to Orange BTC, right? I've been a MicroStrategy investor since they joined the Bitcoin ecosystem, right? At the time, I was still working at Bridgewater. I had a 401k account with Bridgewater, and the amount of investments that I had were limited, but I was able to invest into NASDAQ. And when Saylor bought Bitcoin into, at the time, MicroStrategy balance sheet, that was essentially the only way to my 401k account that I could have some kind of pass-through exposure to Bitcoin. So at the time, I had all my holdings into Bitcoin, and there was another way to increase my exposure to the to Bitcoin. And I have been following Saylor for many, many years. And then I seen what he did with the company back in October of 2024, when I said, hey, I'm no longer a software company with a Bitcoin strategy. I'm a Bitcoin treasury company that has a software business on the side. And for many reasons, I realized it would make sense to have something similar, but in a new region like Brazil and Latin America that, as I like to say, needs Bitcoin the most.
Yes, I mean, spot on. And you hit on two very important points there, Guy, which is education and accessibility, which I think are both some of the main pillars of what Orange BTC is doing, and hopefully for the broader region. But yeah, you know, hearing you speak to the Latin American broader context, I'm not sure, you know, if you and Lynn also share this kind of frustration dance on not understanding why people don't get it quicker. You know, sometimes you go from just, you once you see it and you're like, why are more people not getting this? But then on the flip side, of course, that's what creates the opportunity, right? And I encourage people to play around with the technology, which is essentially what you were touching on, right? Once you actually used it and transacted and saw the global problems, then that's kind of what opened your eyes. And, you know, for me personally, the first time I tested out a transaction was actually with a friend of mine trying to send funds from Brazil to the US. And then I visited Buenos Aires, and speaking with locals, I heard about all these crazy capital control stories. So you have all these different venues that kind of shed light into the massive cracks in the current financial system. Again, once you see it, of course, it's very clear. Seeing it can be actually a pretty difficult jump, because it's such a drastically different monetary system. It's a new protocol, technology, etc. So education is extremely important, and it's one of your main focuses at Orange BTC. So before we get into, you know, maybe the other sides of what you're doing as a treasury company and your strategy, why such a strong focus on education from the start, Gibb? You guys have been very big proponents of getting the message out there, what this means for greater Latin America, starting with Brazil. But yeah, I mean, you know, just any personal ties there with the education component?
Yeah, I think there are a few angles there. So when I was putting the company in place, kind of my big dream, right, was to drive Bitcoin adoption in Latin America. Right. As you mentioned, like the region has all the components to embrace this new technology and to lead the way. And to some extent, it has done it. Right. We've seen countries like El Salvador adopting Bitcoin as a reserve currency. We know there's high adoption in Argentina and even Brazil and other parts of the country that have been successful business that came out of Mexico and Brazil and other parts of Latin America. But overall, my perspective is that even though the U.S. has the reserve currency of the globe right now, I think the level of understanding and adoption and meaningful exposure to Bitcoin is higher in the U.S. than in Brazil, right? You're going to Wall Street at this point in time, and Bitcoin, after 17 years, is no longer a taboo, right? You see BlackRock embracing it. You see Fidelity, now Charlie Schwab, even Vanguard, JP Morgan, Citibank. I think you can point to every single large institution, and even on the wealth side, a lot of RIAs and financial advisors embracing and being able to talk about Bitcoin. And maybe they don't have double digits exposure, and maybe they still have questions, but the Cahir risk has gone away for the most part in the US, I believe. And I would point out that this has happened because the level of education and the size and importance of the companies putting out content about Bitcoin has been extremely well done in the US. So we have seen Fidelity putting out research. We have NYDIG. We have, of course, Sailor and Strategy putting out education and talking about Bitcoin every single week. We have the Bitcoin-only companies like Swan and River and Strike and Unchained. We have all the ETF providers at this point. We have all the miners as public companies. They're putting out research and all that content. We have someone like Bitcoin Magazine covering the space nonstop. So I think it's much more developed in the US and much more available for all types of tastes. Like if you want something more analytical, if you like the memes, or if you like Bitcoin Twitter, I think there's a much more vibrant community, and that has led to a faster kind of adoption into public markets and into institutions adopting Bitcoin, to the point that I think we have something around 50 public companies listed in the US in the Bitcoin, or if you want to expand, digital assets industry, right? From the miners to the exchanges, the infrastructure providers, to the Bitcoin treasury companies and all of that stuff. I don't think that's there in Brazil yet. I know it's not there. Like you go into Faria Lima, which is the local Wall Street, and you go talk to asset managers and pension funds and insurance companies and the banks, and the level of understanding, exposure, and is much, much limited. So I think education is critical for the individual investor all the way to the institutional one. And that was a key element of Orange BTC from the start. So if you want to drive adoption across Latin America, First, you have to start with educating about what it is and driving high-quality content on an ongoing basis through social media, putting out research papers to our blog, to actual courses that are going to launch in the upcoming months. So we came with this key mandate about Bitcoin at the center of our company and education as a key element of pushing it forward. And of course, we have the treasury as well that I can talk more about, but the start of the show is not the treasury component, is not the company itself, is Bitcoin, right? If people are adopting Bitcoin, everyone wins. When Stellar buys Bitcoin in the US, it helps everyone in the network. When Orange BTC buys Bitcoin in Brazil, it helps everyone in the network. When someone who learns about Bitcoin through our content starts allocating to Bitcoin, it strengthens the network and helps everybody. So I think education is a center point of this strategy for now and the upcoming years.
I have so many threads I want to pull on with that, Guy, but you know, and having had your seat in the capital markets industry inside of the US, I mean, something that comes to mind, I'm in Mexico, and what I see is that there's very few people in very few Mexican retail individuals that own public stocks. It's not the same as in the US, where everybody through their 401k or through Robinhood or through all of these other entities participate in the capital markets. And I don't know that that culture, I mean, definitely the culture doesn't exist in the same way in Mexico. I don't know how it is in Brazil if you have a need to educate retail investors. But I do know that when Bitso, the first exchange to sell Bitcoin in Mexico, or one of the first two, started, they had more users within a year than all of the individual accounts on the Bolsa, the Mexico Stock Exchange, because I think for the first time, Bitcoin provided an opportunity for a Latin America individual to participate in asset appreciation. And even though I think the three of us on this call understand that Bitcoin has so much potential beyond number go up, but for an individual investor getting in, number go up is something that appeals to them. How do you approach, I mean, how do you feel that education part is important in terms of letting everybody know that this is an asset they can appreciate in? And the second part of this question is, Brazil is actually quite advanced in their regulatory in digital assets. They have the PIC system, which allows for instant payments. So people are more familiar, more comfortable with digital transactions, I think, in Brazil than they may even be in the US or in other parts of the world because of the advanced approach that Brazil has taken toward money movement. But how would you kind of put those two together in order to help communicate to LATAM individual investors and maybe institutional investors too that Bitcoin is an asset that stands alone from other capital market investments?
Yeah, it's interesting. Brazil has a few of those components that you just mentioned. In terms of investors into the local stock market, like, it is the largest stock market in Latin America, right? About $1 trillion. So very small when compared to the US, but meaningful for the region and meaningful for the entire South Hemisphere. But it's still early days. Like, there are about 5 to 6 million investors in the local stock exchange. So when you think about, we have 215 million individuals in Brazil, only a tiny piece of it has exposure to the local stock market. And there's something very similar. As you mentioned, I think the first or the largest local exchange in the crypto side to expand was Mercado Bitcoin. And they have about 4 million investors. So you can see that there's kind of a similar dynamic, as you mentioned, in Mexico. Brazil does have a Bitcoin ETF, which is a popular product to some extent. There are about 350,000 investors into that product. So when you think about it, almost 10% of the total investors in the local stock market have some type of exposure to Bitcoin. Unfortunately, the most popular product there is not only Bitcoin, it's Bitcoin, I think XRP, and ETH. So It's not perfect by any means, but at least it shows some local demand. I think we're lucky in Brazil because there was a big wave of financial market education, right? I think there's a company called XP Investments, which is now even listed in the US. And they began back in 2002 as an educational company, helping to educate the local retail investor about the stock market. And eventually they grew from a small educational company into one of the largest financial institutions of Brazil. It's like the Charles Schwab of Brazil. And we're lucky to have the co-founder of that company as a board member of Orange BTC. So I think Brazil overall financial market and financial industry is advanced. It's not as well established as the US. There's not as many products, not as many wealth, as we all know. But the financial system had to be extremely efficient because of inflation. Like if you took 2-3 days to settle a wire in the 90s, by the time the money landed into the account, the face value of that money would be 20% less. So the banks had to become extremely efficient. And Pix is a good example. Like, I can give you a real example. We raised capital for Orange BTC back in May and June of last year, right? A few investors invested in Bitcoin, so in kind, and was all perfect. No issues at all. Everyone sent the coins, and the coins got to our wallets with no mistake, no issues, everything by the block, as you guys know. Some people in Brazil use Pix to send actually meaningful amount of capital, and Pix works extremely well in Brazil. You can send $1 million, $2 million to Pix, and it actually lands in your bank account in 30 seconds. So we had no issues at all with the capital that came through, like from Brazilian investors, like the ones who did through Pix. And we also raised capital from folks around the globe through the wire system. And we had wires that took almost 3 weeks to land. They got stuck somewhat in the many banks that they go through, and someone put a number wrong, and suddenly the two parties were waiting for essentially 3 weeks to find where the capital got stuck. So it shows, one, how more efficient Bitcoin is, how transparent it can be, how the war is still operating to a legacy system that is fully segregated. Like what's happening in Brazil is not working in the US, which doesn't work in Mexico. So for you to do global trade, for you to do global operations, it is much more complicated. And again, just to bring it back to Bitcoin, while Pix is an elegant solution in Brazil and has had massive adoption and works quite well, it is very close to a CBDC, right? Pix, they're managed by the central bank in partnership with all the local banks, and they can freeze your Pix, they can unwind it. It's not the same. And Pix, again, works quite well in Brazil. It doesn't work in the US, right? So if you're looking for something that is global and has is censorship resistant, there's nothing better than Bitcoin.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. River is a financial services company that allows you to purchase, sell, and transfer your Bitcoin all through a great suite of products, high security standards, and as of recent, even allowing you to earn a Bitcoin yield on your US dollar cash deposits. For a personalized onboarding experience, go to partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
I think it's key for people to understand it's a completely separate system. It's very different than operating in the, let's say, quote unquote, upgrading the current financial system through, you know, other tokenized forms of still centralized government issued currencies, right? You're talking about two very, very different systems. We touched on this just now, that Brazil has been historically one of the leaders in the region as far as fintech goes. And I'd like to get into a little bit of, so Orange BTC as a public Bitcoin only and being born as a Bitcoin only company and treasury holder, what separates that strategy apart from some of the other options out there, Guy? So, you know, maybe I'm in Brazil, maybe I could choose to purchase Bitcoin directly. I could purchase shares of Orange BTC, or I could purchase shares of other companies that perhaps have some Bitcoin holdings, but that's not specifically what they do. Why do you think Orange has an advantage compared to, let's say, other big names in Brazil that have kind of dabbled with Bitcoin, Medius or Nubank, but they have other operating businesses that are quite large and demand a lot of attention and resources, of course. Is that where you view your advantage is, Guy? You guys are a Bitcoin-only play focused on precisely that, building a treasury and leveraging that treasury in opportunistic ways. I mean, can you paint the picture here of those options?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, as I always say, everyone should have exposure to Bitcoin, ideally Bitcoin in cold storage, right? This is a savings mechanism, is a generational wealth transition way. Like, it is critical for people to understand, buy and hold the asset. This has always been our perspective, has always been my personal perspective, and nothing has changed with Orange BTC. So first and foremost, if we're getting into the space now and think about the best way, I would highly encourage you to start with Bitcoin, understand what it takes, how to hold it, and build an exposure. So that's the main point. Then you think about treasury companies and, of course, about Orange BTC. There are a few differentiators. First of all, not every single investor in Brazil can buy Bitcoin or Bitcoin ETFs. There are many local players. They're regulated away from the asset, but they can buy shares into another company, right? There's nothing preventing them to have shares from a public listed company. So in a way, we open a new mechanism for investors to get exposure to Bitcoin and the Bitcoin industry, right? You can always talk about ETFs or treasury companies. Again, ETFs in Brazil remain an expensive product. You're going to pay something close to 100 bips per year. So, and from a tax perspective, is not as advantageous as holding shares of a public company. So there's a benefit as well. As a company, our main goal is to grow your Bitcoin exposure over time, right? That's the key mandate. That's how we think about as an organization. And when you're holding through an ETF, although it's an efficient way of doing so, and these products have been extremely successful and revolutionary, there are kind of shortcomings in terms of admin costs and taxes. In terms of our differentiation across different Bitcoin companies, Bitcoin treasury companies, I think versus the region, right? We are the largest player in a massive region. We talked a little bit about Latin America, but look, it is one of the richest regions around the globe. It's extremely rich, it's highly populated, and is a region that needs Bitcoin the most, as I mentioned before. So, and again, when you think about the local stock market in Brazil, you have about 400 companies, right? And up until October of last year, there was no way for someone to get exposure to the Bitcoin ecosystem into a like native born company yet, right? So we are the first company born into the Bitcoin ecosystem that fully embraced it, that is fully dedicated to this new ecosystem to be listed in the local exchange. There are no miners, no exchanges, no infrastructure place, nothing like that. So if you're a local investor aiming to have exposure to this industry, or if you're a foreign investor, as are many, that have to build a presence in emerging markets in Latin America, and you're looking for a way to get some level of exposure to the digital asset or Bitcoin space, there is no opportunities. So we bring that differentiation. And then, yes, there are a lot of players in Brazil that offer exposure to Bitcoin digital assets. Like you mentioned Nubank. I think, interesting enough, Nubank at this point in time, I think they are the company with the largest number of clients with crypto exposure. I think they have about 7 million clients with exposure to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, like in the region I'm talking about, right? So like that is a massive number. I think our differentiation is focus, right? Nubank is a fintech offering a range of services around finance overall. And they're not only offering Bitcoin, they're offering you 50 cryptocurrencies, right? And just by doing so, as I believe you'd agree, is a disservice to our customers, right? And one that is very hard to unwind, because once you've done it, now you have 7 million customers with exposure to 50 different crypto assets, which most of them make no sense at all, and they have no idea what they're buying into. And then not only you have to maintain exposure to all of those, you have to track, you have to report, you have to improve, you have to service all of those clients. And most of them, over the long term, will lose money. So it's not that they'll be happy with that investment. They will be unpleasant with the investment. And it's a distraction overall. So I think when you have focus and a key mandate to drive Bitcoin adoption in the region, you become the hub. And we're seeing that. We're seeing a lot of local players coming to us for partnership, for ideas, for consulting engagements. And we're seeing a lot of international players aiming to build exposure into Latin America and say, you guys understand Bitcoin. You guys have a massive treasury. You guys understand the region. Help us to enter into this market. So I think our differentiation is our size, is the quality of our team, is the focus around Bitcoin, and having no other distractions.
How is Orange BTC's go-to-market separated between institutional and individual investors? I mean, it sounds like you've got a massive opportunity for institutional investors to have exposure to Bitcoin. Just as you saw Saylor with MicroStrategy early on, I mean, within the region, it's really difficult for pension funds, for asset managers to put Bitcoin in their portfolio. And I think culturally, part of this is moving slower than in the U.S. within the LATAM region from those particular pools of cash. But how are you seeing that institutional potential?
I think it is massive, and it's still very early days. I think we are in 2020 for Brazil, Latin America, and Orange BTC when you think about what happened with Strategy in the U.S., right? When we go have calls and meetings, most know Bitcoin. At least, like, again, let's go back. Bitcoin is one of the most well-known brands around the globe. I think one day it'll be the largest brand around the globe, right? It's probably top 10 at this point. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we become top one in the next decade or two decades. So everyone kind of have heard about Bitcoin. But we all know one thing is hearing about Bitcoin and believing you understand. It's very different to have the conviction and understanding all the aspects and how the protocol works and what's going on in this market. So that there is a gap already. But when you get to Strategy and Michael Saylor, like that's a force for many, many institutional investors. Like I had that conversation with dozens of local investors, extremely sophisticated, overseeing massive pools of capital, but they have no clue who Michael Saylor is and what Strategy has done. So that shows, again, the opportunity, but the challenge, right? Now you have to, again, drive adoption. You have to host webinars and meetings and roadshows and explain what Bitcoin is and how the model works. And it'll take time. It's not something that will happen in a week or a month. And we all know in this industry that price still drives demand, right? If we see have a cycle as we've done in the past quarter, no one really wants to talk about Bitcoin. People, okay, Bitcoin is going to 50K. Is that famous meme of Bitcoin at 20K and there's no one in the window, Bitcoin at 60K and there's a massive line. So that still remains a little bit of the story. But that's the opportunity, and that's one of our goals, like not only helping institutional investors understand about Bitcoin, but eventually helping and building new products and new solutions in partnership with them to help to drive adoption in the region.
Yeah, and you know, that's so key. And the pension fund component, I mean, you know, Michael Saylor so glamorously showed that there's massive amounts of capital and pockets in the capital markets that can't or don't have exposure to Bitcoin. And on the pension fund component specifically, I mean, it's very interesting because they, of course, have millions of beneficiaries behind them, right? So a pension fund is representing a large amount of people. And so getting them to understand the importance of Bitcoin, I mean, to me, is just so important, and I really admire everything that Saylor has done in that regard, what you guys are doing, and, you know, there's many regional leaders out there educating on this. And on that point, I don't know about you guys, you know, if let's just say Bitcoin were to run up to 200 or 300,000 in the near future, I think maybe neither of us three would be necessarily surprised, but what that means is that lots of things in the broader global economy are kind of cracking and breaking. There's this interesting balance between wanting adoption to accelerate, but at the same time, it's extremely important for players like pension funds that represent millions and affect the lives of millions to get involved early as well, right? So on that topic, I mean, as much detail as you're comfortable sharing, would you say that those conversations are advancing? I understand we're early, and specifically in Latin America, but are you optimistic on the initial conversations? Are people open-minded, curious?
Yeah, very optimistic. Otherwise, like, I wouldn't even put this company in place. Like, I think, like, there is an opportunity. We have to drive adoption. The conversations are happening. These are fully regulated players with investment committees and compliance departments and all that stuff. So everything takes time. And I agree with the sentiment is spot on, because if Bitcoin were to move to $300,000 in the next quarter, we'd all be extremely happy, right? But on the other hand, a lot of people will be left behind, right? And wouldn't have built exposure. And at the same time, at $300,000, we'll be able to buy much fewer coins than what we can buy now at essentially $90-something thousand. So it's always the dynamic there. You want adoption to continue to happen. We want the company to keep buying Bitcoin. We want more people to understand it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, that a new financial system is being built, that the current one is fully broken from so many perspectives, and there is an alternative, and there's still a massive upside. But again, once we go from $90,000 to $1 million, that's another 10x, right? How many 10x we're going to have after that? Probably a few, but not as many, right? You don't want to lose the current 10x. So I think the conversations are moving forward. I think people understand the need. And something like what happened this past few days with Venezuela is another dot, right? From many perspectives of how the global economy and geopolitics work and how easy things can change. So anyway, I hope it's another eye-opening event for people to think more broadly about what's going on in the global stage and thinking about how to protect their wealth.
It's interesting how you mentioned about Michael Saylor and his, first of all, how he came to you and how there is a lack of awareness of what strategy is. I mean, I even find it among some of my friends who are non-Bitcoiners in the U.S. They have no idea what the stock has done. But you must have had conversations with him and known him, because I think we were even together at some events with Swan where Saylor was there as well. Talk to us a little bit about your advisors who helped talk to you about the strategy and how you evolved it and got to think about this balance between providing this opportunity to investors and also building Orange's Bitcoin treasury strategy as your own company. So how are you thinking about those two aspects of it, and who has been influential or helpful to you in evolving that thought process?
Yeah, I think Saylor has been extremely influential to me and also to the overall community, and has been very generous of his time. Like, you see him cheering and supporting other players, even within his own jurisdiction, right? Which one could see as competition, but again, no one is competing among themselves. Like, this is a new financial system. These are new companies being born into this new financial system, and the competition is a legacy one, because like, the opportunity ahead is massive. But just like, again, Saylor has been involved in many ways. Eric Weiss, which is his personal friend, the guy who actually put Saylor into the Bitcoin journey back in the day and has been advising Saylor for the past 5 years on building strategy to what it has become, is a board member. And he's more than a board member. He's almost a co-founder to some extent. He has been involved with the project for more than a year at this point, since I had this plan of building the company. So I think Saylor has shown the way of increasing the amount of Bitcoin over time in a prudent and constant manner. So we tried to replicate, essentially, since we launched, we have been buying Bitcoin every single week. In weeks that we're trading below par, we bought back shares. So essentially, every single week for the past 10 weeks or so that we have been listed, we have been pushing the envelope and increasing the amount of Bitcoin per share of our investors, or decreasing the amount of shares that you need to have the exposure to a full Bitcoin. So, and then I think that Saylor has done in spades, right? Since he embraced the Bitcoin back in 2020, but mainly since he embraced the Bitcoin strategy, treasury strategy back in 2024, has been pushing the envelope every single week. And I think he has made mistakes, and as any other company has done in the space, because like, they're building the plane while flying it, right? And this is a totally new segment, it's a new market, but his level of conviction with Bitcoin and the strategy has been unshaken, even with the sentiment that has been at all-time lows from my perspective. And I think that's something that we built the company, Orange BTC, under the same mindset. This is not my company. This is a Bitcoin's company. Let's have a lot of people that have deep understanding about Bitcoin, long-term conviction, and long-time preference, because we're not building for a cycle or a trade. We're building for the next 10, 20, 30 years. So when you're Bitcoin only, when you're built by design on purpose, right? This was not, we're pivoting the strategy. No, we built to run this strategy. And you're not thinking about a short-term opportunity. We're thinking about generational legacy. I think it drives the company. So we had a tough quarter, as everyone knows, for Bitcoin and treasury companies. My conviction, my drive, and my energy to build this business has never been higher. So I think having the conviction and the focus is critical, and Sailor has shown the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, this quarter, in the longer history of what's ahead, will be just a tiny blip, I think. And to your point of Sailor and what strategy has done and what you guys have done in a shorter timeline, that consistent execution is due to the focus that we were talking about earlier. I mean, it's very different than a company who's, you know, selling a bunch of different coins and is essentially a bit of a casino and works on a transactional fee model. I mean, it's just a totally different value proposition. And, you know, I applaud.
And just to build on that, and sorry, but I think it's an important element that Sailor has done, and to some extent, I would argue we went even one step further, is full transparency. Right, like you wanna, like, very few companies in the public markets are fully transparent, right? What we've seen time and time again is a bunch of scams and auditors releasing reports that were not real, what was going on in the business. And I think Sailor has moved the needle on building a dashboard that tracks everything real time. So you know what's going on with the company real time. And we have replicated the same strategy in Brazil with our dashboard. We sent out weekly reports talking about every single operation that happened in the treasury. And we also have proof of reserves. All of our coins and the address they're in are listed in our website, so anyone can check on-chain the coins that the company have. So I think it's just a new paradigm of transparency and governance that we haven't seen before, and it remains very early days and poorly understood. Like, very few people really understand what's going on. But I think this new wave of companies, those that will succeed, and again, a lot of people will fail, will make mistakes, and will not be able to execute this strategy overall. But those that succeed, we kind of reshape public markets because it will bring a new level of transparency that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I love that. And speaking of remaking capital markets, I mean, Israel and I are big fans of just the rethinking about what particular instruments. Like, I know, maybe you can't speak to this or not, but I know Orange BTC right now is a publicly traded company on the Brazil Stock Exchange. Strategy started that way, but then they have iterated where they offer a variety of different public instruments that have different investor profiles in mind, some that are geared more for equity appreciation, others that are geared more for income based on the appreciation, the underlying asset of Bitcoin. How do you think about that? And do you have any kind of roadmap or plan to expand the offerings of Orange BTC and different capital instruments?
Yeah, so first of all, I see with good eyes all of this innovation, right? Because to some extent, that's what drives adoption, right? When someone is buying Stretch from Sailor, who's now paying, I guess, 11% per year, you're trying to capture a piece of the future upside of Bitcoin without the volatility, right? I think there's all new instruments, and being very honest, I think they're still being tested, right? Like, even Stretch has not found your perfect balance. Like, what is the yield that the market expects for it to trade very close to $100? We might be getting close to that or not, but I think, like, this has been only 6 months. Again, this is a new industry that I believe will be here for decades, and we're talking about the very, very, very early days. And if it is new in the US and challenging for a company like Strategy to get it right, like, you can imagine it would be even more so in a new market like Brazil. So the roadmap ahead will explore all of these opportunities. The local capital market is to some extent, like, sophisticated and open to innovation. And we have already done so. Like, Orange BTC was the first company, I believe, in Latin America to issue a convertible bond to buy Bitcoin at zero coupon. So what Saylor has done in the US, we've done it in Brazil as well. And just to give an example, the Brazilian government, the federal government, pays you at this point in time 15% per year to borrow your money. And Orange BTC was able to borrow money at zero cost to buy Bitcoin. So we have already done one. We've showed it's possible. We already have some leverage into our balance sheet. We're going to explore new ways to keep increasing the amount of Bitcoin per share over time. And I think in the quarters and years to come, issue new type of instruments that make sense in the local market.
As we're wrapping up here, Guy, can you give us an idea of who the team is as well at Orange BTC?
Yeah, sure. Which I think is one of our key differentiators, but I think it makes sense to go a little bit deeper into that. So we talk about Eric Weiss, right? Someone who has been in this ecosystem for over a decade, personal friend with Saylor, the person who helped him to get into Bitcoin. He's a board member of Core Scientific, one of the largest miners around the globe. So very well versed into Bitcoin, public markets, and treasury companies. Josh Levine, who I mentioned, who was my boss at Bridgewater, a guy with 15 years of BlackRock experience, then spent 5 years at Bridgewater. And prior to that, he was at Merrill Lynch trading LATAM. So he knows Latin American extremely well. He is the chairman. So highly involved, personal friend, great person as well. Knows capital markets better than most people around the globe. Then we have, I mentioned, the co-founder of XP Inc. His name is Julio Capua. He's a Brazilian. He built one of the most successful local financial companies. It was an educational company in the early days and got listed on NASDAQ a few years ago as one of the largest financial institutions in Brazil with millions of customers and billions of dollars in AUM. The fourth board member is Fernando Urrich. I don't know if you know him, but he's the largest voice in Bitcoin in Latin America. He wrote the first book about Bitcoin in Portuguese back in 2014. Then he eventually launched a YouTube channel that has a million subscribers. He worked at XP Inc. as the head of Bitcoin and crypto assets. And right now he's a partner at one of the largest wealth platforms in Brazil. So knows capital markets extremely well, knows Bitcoin extremely well, a very large voice into the local market, also board member and a key piece of our educational efforts. And then beyond that, we have the management team, my co-founder Giga, who has been CEO and CFO of public companies in Brazil for almost a decade in the educational area. So, and many others. So like, it is a very nimble team. Like, we really run lean at the company, but we have high quality talent, people who understand Bitcoin, financial markets, and education extremely well. And that's the starting point.
Part of the mission of Build with Bitcoin is we want to see more innovation and entrepreneurship globally in around the Bitcoin ecosystem and community. What advice would you give to an entrepreneur who's thinking about a business or how they might get involved in the Bitcoin ecosystem, why they should consider it, why they should look at even incorporating Bitcoin treasury into their own venture? But what thoughts would you have, and especially for an entrepreneur in the LATAM region?
Yeah, I think there are few things that changed my life completely, right? And one of them were entrepreneurship, and the other one was Bitcoin, right? And combining the two of them together at this point in time is quite powerful. So, especially at this point in time, with AI coming up and Elon Musk arguing that in a few years every single job out there would be replaceable. Being able to be on your own and build something that you control, you generate the value, and you capture most of the upside, I'll argue makes more sense than ever. One, because you no longer be competing for your job with another grad student that went to another school, but like, you're going to be competing against AI, and it'll be very hard. And on the other side of the spectrum, AI is a tool, right? That is becoming much more accessible, extremely, like we built most of Orange BTC with AI. Like I wrote the business plan back in September of 2024 with AI from zero. And that was essentially what took us here, raised $400 million, helped to hire an A-class team. We have best-in-class investors from the Winklevoss to Adam Back to Ricardo Salinas to many of the largest names in this market. And AI was a key element. So I'll argue that it's easier than ever to build a new business given the internet and AI as a tool, and more critical than ever than being versatile and building something that you control and have the upside because competition is coming, and thinking within the box will not make it, I would say. And beyond that, it's funny because if you go see online, people fight all the time on X, and it looks like, okay, Bitcoins are harsh and all that stuff. But I think it's such a welcoming community, and you'll make friends all over the world. When you say that you are for Bitcoin and you're helping drive adoption and you're trying to make a difference, people will help you. Again, it is a global community, very powerful, beyond like the network itself. I'm talking about the people here. And it's a very early days industry. So if you don't know what to do and how to make a difference, I would embrace AI, entrepreneurship, and Bitcoin big time, because that's a powerful mix right there.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to stop. Thanks for your time, Guy. And it'd be great if you can let listeners know as well where they can find you, where they can get more information on Orange BTC, all of that contact info.
Sure. So Orange BTC, you can visit our website, Orange with J, like my t-shirt, BTC for Bitcoin, BitcoinTreasuryCompany.com. You can follow us on social media at Orange BTC on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube. And then if you want to follow me, as we have here on the handle, at Guy Amado Gomez on Twitter mainly, we'd appreciate people following us. There's a lot of exciting news coming up. I think this will be a very interesting year for Bitcoin and companies in the space. It's a very interesting decade, right? Not even a year. The next decade will be transformational. And I think if you want to follow what's going on, that's a good way to start.
Thank you so much. And we'll look forward to following the journey of Orange BTC and having future conversations with you as well.
Great. Thank you so much. Talk soon.